Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Batter up! Welcome to No Bunts, the podcast for the casual baseball fan here on the Athletic Baseball Show. Thank you for joining us. I'm Tass Mellis here in Atlanta's studio. With me, super producer, it's JD.
Hello.
What's up, JD? We got giggles already. This is fantastic. And my co-host, all the way from Taiwan, it's Joel McMillan. Joel, what are we working with on the background today?
Well, Tess, I already took my shot with using the Oakland background a couple weeks ago. That's poor form on my part. So I thought I'd just go straight up old school Nintendo baseball background.
Nothing wrong with that. Yeah, we are going to get into heavy A's talk just to be a little positive because it sure feels like they're going to Las Vegas. We'll get into their history. We're just going to celebrate it, Joel. And you told me before we came on, you kind of shed a tear. Or you got misty-eyed was your terminology.
Yeah, I got a little misty, especially with the Cinderella A's and the Moneyball streak. It was just awesome seeing the Coliseum rocking and all those fans and the success that those teams had. I know we're going to get into that, but yeah, it was, you know, got a little emotional watching it because, you know, from what it sounds like, it's a done deal with Oakland and Las Vegas. So excited to get into that later in the show.
Excited to see you a little misty-eyed a little later in the show as well, Joel. I can't deny it. Okay, we'll get into that. We're going to debate the best ballpark nuts, as in snacks nuts, not people who are wiling out at the ballpark. But first, let's start with the five best things in baseball from the past week. We are quite literally starting with the best as we count these down, Joel, because we're starting with Shohei Ohtani. The baseball world is just marveling at what this guy is doing yet again. MVP, whatever, runner-up, whatever. He's gotten even better this season. He's somehow one-upping himself. He's leading the Angels in all of these categories, Joel. This is real stuff. Runs, hits, triples, homers, RBI, stolen bases, on-base percentage, slugging percentage. He's second in average. On-base plus slugging, he's over 1,000. Total bases, oh yeah. And on the hill, wins, innings pitched, strikeouts, and WAR, of course. The Athletic conducted its annual player poll. Over 100 players were asked if they were building a team, who would they start with? Well, most picked Ohtani, of course. And when it comes to his upcoming free agency, despite the Angels currently being a wild card team, which could mean he sticks around, who knows? A majority of the players think he'll be a Dodger next season, 57.2%. The Angels came in second at 11%, and the Padres, Mets, and Yankees also got votes. Experts kind of agree that he'll get at least $500 million, or around that number, on his next contract. Joel, is it possible that he could get $600 million on his next contract?
I think so, Tess, and I think he will for a couple of reasons. First of all, his stock, you know, if he wins MVP this year and, you know, barring any unforeseen tragedies, things like that with his health or anything, he's pretty much a lock to win it at this point. His stock isn't going to be any higher. He came off a great World Baseball Classic, you know, like you just listed all of his stats so far. I mean, he's just doing unbelievable things. And Tass, like on that note about the playoffs, let's say the Angels do get in and, you know, they have some success. I mean, that will be a direct result of him. I mean, I feel like he's almost carrying that team on his back. So his stock's never going to be higher. So I don't think $600 million is unreasonable, Tass, but I kind of look at it from a different standpoint. You know, the casual fan or the casual person might just say, wow, $600 million, that's absolutely crazy. But Tass, I look at it as like a guy with Ohtani. How much money could he actually generate as a player? And I think that with a guy like Ohtani, he could actually generate $1 billion over the duration of a contract. And Tass, put me in that camp of him going to the Dodgers. I think he's going to go there. You know, you look at Japanese TV rights, merchandise, and other revenue streams. He could easily clear over $1 billion for whatever team he signs with. You know, and that's not even taking into account, you know, like what he does on the field. So I don't think it's unrealistic to suggest that he's going to make $600 million in free agency. And I know it might sound ridiculous, but I think you might even be getting him at a bargain at that.
Amazing stuff. I'm going to stay away from the money and the dollar value that he's going to get. I do agree with you in terms of what he generates. That's a very, very good point. That's probably hard for us sitting here to really put a number on, to really try and understand. But yeah, you being in Asia and the market that the Dodgers or the Angels or whoever could access through that, that's very interesting. I'm just excited to see him in the postseason if that happens, as the Angels are holding on to a wild card spot right now, just barely, and it's not going to be easy, especially with the Rangers playing the way they are this season, and the Astros at some point will turn it on, or will they? That leads us to our next question. A fantastic segue by you, Joel, wanting to talk about these two teams, the Dodgers and the Astros, both underperforming to this point, falling behind in their respective divisions. Which team is in more trouble, do you think? Is it the Dodgers or the Astros?
Well, Tass, these teams are very, very similar in a lot of ways. They're veteran teams. Both teams have players, key players who are going to miss the season, and also lost some key players in free agency as well. The Astros lost Verlander and the Dodgers lost Trey Turner. With the Dodgers, Walker Buehler, Gavin Lux, and Dustin May are out for the season. With the Astros, you're looking at Luis Garcia and McCullers. They're out for the season. So they're very, very similar in a lot of ways. I think both teams are just kind of going through a difficult stretch right now. All teams do that. I'm not really particularly worried about either team making the playoffs. I think both teams will. But in the long run, I'm going to stick with Houston. I like their chances more. Their pitching is significantly better than Los Angeles, both their bullpen and their starting pitching. The Dodgers field a better offense, but I like Houston's chances better in the long run. And both teams play in fairly competitive divisions, but the NL West is very competitive. The Giants have really come on as of late. I think they overtook the Dodgers. The Diamondbacks have been a surprise. San Diego is going to turn it on at some point. So the Dodgers have a tougher division, but both are in similar spots. I'm not really particularly worried about either team, but yeah, I still like Houston's chances long term.
And you're a bit of a Dodger hater. Right.
That's just an ongoing joke.
It's just great to have an ongoing joke here on No Bunts, going back to last season. The Dodgers. I wonder, actually, you being a very, very slight Dodger hater, going back to Ohtani really quickly, are you going to be okay with that if he does sign in L.A.?
Tass, I'll get an Ohtani jersey. I'll get one of those beautiful Dodger blue Ohtani jerseys. Yeah, I'll love it. That will convert me. That'll convert me.
You're right. They are going to generate $1 billion because of people like you buying jerseys. They have been passed by the Giants. You mentioned there in the AL West, the Diamondbacks, they got their own MVP candidate in Carroll, who's being awesome, just being fantastic this year. Corbin Carroll is a heck of a story. Him and Acuna sort of at the top of the MVP rankings. So the Dodgers have slipped a little bit. The Astros, they got back on the winning side of things Tuesday night as we record here Wednesday, but they had lost five in a row. It's an interesting scenario for both those teams. As we said, the Astros battling the Angels, which would be a heck of a story there for a wild card spot in the Western division there in the AL behind the Rangers. Let's get to something a little bit more positive than those two teams struggling. Was that really one of the best things in baseball this week? The Dodgers and the Astros struggling? Nah, but we had to squeeze it in. Had to squeeze it in under some sort of umbrella. The Cincinnati Reds are scorching. This is incredible. We talked about it last week when we were just marveling at Elly De La Cruz. And it was nice to look through rose-colored glasses there. But man, has it kept up. These guys are on fire. They have won 10 in a row. It seems like a Cinderella team right now. They're 12-2. Since calling up Elly De La Cruz, they're leading the NL Central, the first time they've led the division this deep into a season since 2012. And now, Canadian legend Joey Votto is back. He was out since August with a couple surgeries on his rotator cuff and biceps. His first game back on Monday. There are even Reds fans questioning, I don't know, we're playing well. Do we bring back our legend? There were really those discussions happening. He was batting sixth because they were hitting so well, and they were wondering how Joey Votto was going to perform. Well, my goodness. At Great American Ballpark, he lit it on fire. Great ovation for him to come out. His first at-bat, and then his second at-bat, he hit a no-doubter. Great stuff. Great moment. The crowd was hype. He circled the bases, faked a little handshake with the third base coach. Went into the dugout, wore the Viking cape and helmet for the first time, came out for a curtain call. A couple innings later, an even more important hit. Bases loaded for him. Reds down one. He singled in two to take the lead and win that game. They've won 10 in a row, Joel. What is this team? What are the Cincinnati Reds? Can you believe, after having that discussion last week where we were both sort of wondering, do they have the pitching? Are they just too young? Are they for real?
Tess, I don't know. TBD. TBD, we're going to find out. They looked apart right now. You know, teams are always going to go. I mean, Tess, even bad teams, and I'm not saying that the Reds are a super bad team, but nothing was really expected of them this season. But, you know, even bad teams get hot. I mean, Tess, the A's last week won seven games in a row, which was awesome to see. They're doing everything right. And Tess, you know, they went on the road and swept Houston. And I know Houston's kind of scuffling a bit, but it's still the defending World Series champions. You sweep them in their own building. I mean, that's a statement win as far as I'm concerned. There's such an exciting team to watch. They're so young. They've graduated several of their exciting prospects. You know, we talked a bit about that last week. Tess, you mentioned the pitching. That's where I think, you know, the Reds kind of are going to, it's going to be tough for them. I still think they can kind of win the Central because it is wide open. That division, it doesn't seem like anyone's really running away with it. And the Cardinals, we've talked about them, they've struggled. So I think I don't see why they can't win the division. The GM said last week that, you know, if they're still in contention, and I don't see why they wouldn't be, or at least even near a playoff spot, that they would be buyers at the deadline. This is great to see for baseball and especially Reds fans because, you know, they're a small market team. And from what I understand, their owner is fairly frugal too. And they've let a lot of good players go or have traded a lot of good players over the year. But that being said, you know, they've drafted well, they've developed well, the assets they've gotten in return for some of these players that they've traded recently are panning out, and it's great, and it's all coming together. And, you know, Tess, there's always that one bandwagon team. Like, if you're a casual fan, I feel like you want to get behind, and I'm going to go ahead and say, you know, in 2023, that's the Reds. I love watching them. I watch their highlights. It's just so infectious. And, you know, we posted that Joey Votto interview he did in his first game back. And, you know, Tess, usually post-game interviews in baseball and any sport, it's just very cliche things they say, but Votto really kind of like takes the time to think of an answer, and he, you know, he's very well spoken, and you know, you can tell it's a very sincere answer. And that was great to see. And I'm all in on the Reds. I hope they win the Central. I would absolutely love to see that team in the playoffs come October.
Oh, yes. The Reds are the team of no bunts. There's no doubt with this Toronto connection. Joey Votto's parents, his Canadian parents, I don't know if they're Canadian, but he was born in Canada, so they must be ridiculously proud. As you said, that post-game interview on the field, that's usually full of... you know, your common cliches. Yeah, we put it on our Instagram account, no underscore bunts. The guy is a marvel, and I know the team is ridiculously young, and even some fans were wondering, should this guy get inserted here as a 39-year-old? Well, yeah, because he is the adult in the room. You want him around, and... you got to get behind it. You're right about the team being frugal. They haven't put a lot of money into this team, and that's unfortunate. But the bats and the speed of this team makes it a very, very fun watch. To me, they've got some the Guardians vibes from last season, where they just run and run and run and run. As we said last week, they have base running meetings every day, and so it's a very fun team to get behind. Ellie De La Cruz has slowed down a bit since his hot start, as we sort of expected. There's a lot of breaking stuff coming his way, but he's still getting on, and he's offsetting those struggles with his speed. A ton of infield hits, like on Monday when Joey Votto's night, he beat out a key infield hit, and he scored the go-ahead run on Votto's single. And then the next night, had three hits, another infield single, because he literally just runs out everything. He had an infield single where he slid head first into first base. He had a double last night, and then he also muscled out his second homer, which was Oppo, which was nice to see for him, and just shows how big and strong he is. Fantastic stuff there from the Cincinnati Reds.
Yeah.
Let's get behind it.
Tess, I just wanted to add one quick point too. There, Tess, the Reds have an unreal bullpen too. They've got one of the best bullpens in baseball. And you mentioned Corbin Carroll. He's probably an absolute lock for Rookie of the Year at this point.
Yep.
But their shortstop, Matt McClain, he is... I mean, if Corbin Carroll wasn't playing this season, he got called up in May. He has had an unbelievable start to his career, too. So just wanted to add that. So the Reds, they're legit. Why not?
Why not? Let's jump in on it. Another guy who's had an incredible start to his season. It's June 21st, and the Marlins, Luis Arraez, he's flirting with 400. He was at 400. He's dropped now to 398, but he had dropped even further. It looked like he had finally hit that slide where he was going to fall away from 400. He was on an 0-for-15 slide that dropped him to 378. But then he went 5-for-5 twice in 3 days this past weekend. That made 3 5-hit games in a calendar month, only the fourth player to do so since 1900. Joining 3 Hall of Famers, George Sisler, Ty Cobb, and Dave Winfield. So he's at 398 now after Tuesday night against the Toronto Blue Jays. Do you think Arraez has a real shot at doing this, Joel?
I think so. I mean, Tess, this guy just hits, man. Like, he's got zero power, but whatever. You know, we're talking about a guy hitting 400. Tass, his plate discipline is unreal. He doesn't really chase bad pitches at all. He's got a strikeout rate of 5.3%. And just to put that in context, Barry Bonds, everyone's got their feelings on Bonds, whatever. But, Bonds had an unbelievable eye. And Bonds' career walk rate was just shy of 12%. And, this dude, he's got a walk rate of less than 6%. So, he's seeing pitches. He's probably the best contact hitter in the league right now. I don't see why he can't do it. Not a lot of players have really flirted with it. I feel like every maybe 10, 15 years, there's a guy that kind of gets close and at the All-Star break. And, Arraez is that guy this season. I would love to see him do it. I think he has a legitimate shot. I think, he's got the skills. He's got the contact skills to do it and the plate discipline to do it. And like you said, 3 5-hit games in 1 month. I mean, that's unreal. I mean, what do you say to that? It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, a lot of hitting happening in that Marlins Blue Jays series in terms of just number of hits. Bo Bichette also got to 100 hits when Arraez went 5 for 5. He and Arraez, only players to 100 hits this season. I wanted to get a Bo Bichette fact in there for you because I know you love Bo.
I do. And, you know, Tass, this is more like anecdotal. I don't like to compare generations. I think it's a fool's errand to say, well, this player is the best hitter of all time. But, you know, Tass, I mean, we're in 2023. I mean, the league is much more international now. When guys did this in years past, you know, the competition level just wasn't there, you know, and Arraez is doing it against the best pitchers in the world. And when guys did this in years past, the skill of the pitchers just wasn't there. So I think that just kind of highlights just how impressive, you know, this accomplishment is. And I hope that he does it because, you know, this will follow, you know, Judge breaking the record and then breaking the American League home run record and then possibly Arraez, you know, hitting 400. It's a great story for baseball. And I love these chase stories, you know, like every day, Tass, you get an update and, you know, they talk about it and it's exciting and they cut to the at bats and stuff. So it's great for baseball. It just gets more eyes on the product.
No doubt. A great story. I want to hear your take on this next story and whether or not it was a positive or a negative story, Joel. We had a Father's Day blunder in Atlanta. Let me take you to Truist Park, Father's Day Sunday. The Braves' Charlie Culberson's dad was at the park, and he was going to throw out the first pitch. All right, that's wonderful. But the team designated Culberson for assignment before the game. So they decided to revoke dad's opening pitch status. But here's where things turn positive. Okay, sorry, Mr. Culberson. You're not getting the ball. However, they had a quick replacement because Michael Harris II, he's a local here in Atlanta. Dad was available. So Michael Harris II got behind the plate, caught dad's opening pitch. And then Michael Harris II continued this ridiculously hot streak that he's on. He went 5 for 5 himself. Another 5 for 5er, a double, and a mammoth 3-run homer, a 453-foot blast. After a slow start to the season, just quickly, Harris on fire through 12 games through Monday, batting 478. He's come around. I think the injuries were slowing him down, a rookie last season. So anyway, back to the Culberson-Harris scenario. Culberson, it's interesting because he actually hadn't played a single game since being called up to the Braves a month ago. He was just there on the bench, just waiting. So, Joel, I think there's two types of people. People who look at this as a humongous mistake or people who look at this as a success in the end. Where do you stand?
Well, Tass, you know, one man's loss is another man's gain. You know, that's what they say.
do they?
It's unfortunate. I mean, I feel bad for Culberson and his family. I mean, I'm sure that was going to be a special moment for their family. Just, you know, bad timing. But Tass, what's really interesting too, when I was reading about this, he did this from the 9 spot and Google couldn't help me, Tass. I even fired up old ChatGPT. I couldn't find, maybe someone from the Bleacher Creatures can help me out. My Google skills aren't great, but I don't know any number 9 hitters that went 5 for 5. I searched extensively. I couldn't find it. So I thought that was pretty cool. Him doing that from the 9 spot.
Yeah. And Snitker doesn't seem to be motivated at all to move him up. They like him there, even though he's on fire and he was named NL Player of the Week. That's an interesting one. Yeah, the Bleacher Creatures have not chimed in quite yet, but a fantastic week. That's a great point about him having 5 hits from the 9 hole. Usually ChatGPT does you well. But not today.
Data only goes up to the end of 2021. So it didn't have anything for me at all on this one.
Well, Bleacher Creatures, chime in. Has a number 9 hitter ever gone 5 for 5? Also, whether or not you think that's a positive story, because they probably should have just let Michael Harris's dad do it in the first place anyways. Mm-hmm. He's a mainstay with that team. Anyway, we've got to take a quick break. But after it, we're going to look at the best moments in Oakland A's history. We'll be right back.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Welcome back to No Bunts. It's been a very, very, very tough few months for the Oakland A's. The move to Las Vegas appears all but official. Now, they're trying. The fans are trying there to get the team sold locally. They held a reverse boycott where 27,000 fans filled the Coliseum, only to have Commissioner Rob Manfred say this when he was asked about it. He said, quote, "It was great. It's great to see what is, this year, almost an average Major League Baseball crowd in the facility for one night." Gosh, that's painful stuff from Commissioner Manfred. So, it's been tough. We don't have to harp on it, how unfortunate it is that their baseball team appears to be leaving. For one segment, let's just remember the good times, Joel. Even if the book is ending, let's have a celebration of life. Let's go through what we consider the best accomplishments in A's history. This is a totally subjective list. We want everybody watching along on YouTube to chime in. First, we're going to start with the Moneyball streak, Joel. A sensational streak in 2002. Take us through this moment. And was this a moment that got you misty-eyed, as we talked about earlier?
Das, there was, got definitely the mist started with this one for sure, because you had kind of put everything in order. There was a video, I think MLB.com had posted a video a couple years ago, and it just kind of showed a highlight counting down all the games from the streak. And it was just awesome to see. You know, the Coliseum was rocking. They had all that success. And Das, you know, this was a year after, you know, they had that heartbreaking loss to the Yankees in the playoffs in 2001. And then they lost Damon and Giambi in the offseason. And that's what kind of, you know, brought on this whole Moneyball philosophy. So it was great to watch this task for a couple reasons, you know, just the streak itself. And then, you know, them getting a win number 20, as they, you know, documented in the movie, where they had, I think it was an 11-0 lead against the Royals.
Yeah, 11-0.
And then they ended up blowing it. And then Hatterberg hit that walk-off home run. Tass, like, I'm not going to get misty. I'm close just thinking about it. But, I mean, it was just so awesome to see. Just, like, that building just rocking, that success. You know, they went to the playoffs that year. And, Tass, I think the Moneyball, like, not only is this a great moment in Oakland A's history, but, Tass, it's also, I feel like, a significant moment in baseball history. Obviously, for the accomplishment, but, you know, for better or for worse, this is kind of the genesis of the analytic and the analytics era. And this proved that analytics, I feel, do have a place in the game. How much, it's not my place to say, but clearly this experiment worked with what they did. You know, they went to the playoffs. They won over 100 games that year, and they had a great season. So the Moneyball streak was absolutely amazing. You know, they had the big three in Zito, Mulder, and Hudson. And Tass, how about this? Give me some Miguel Tejada and Eric Chavez with the white cleats at third base. Dude was a beast, you know, for 5 or 6 years there. Then he got hurt. But they, I mean, Tass, there were just so many talented players on that team. And, you know, unfortunately, it was kind of a sign of things to come in the future, because, you know, with them letting those big names go, it's just continued to happen for the last 20 years.
And yeah, we actually highlighted Ramon Hernandez's walk-off bunt a little bit earlier this season. You reminded me where you're going through the players there. They had a squeeze bunt in the ALDS there after going 103 and 59 and winning 20 straight games with guys you mentioned, including, yeah, Billy Koch was another guy I saw there. Billy Koch, my goodness. But Hatterberg with that home run to finish off that game, the 20th straight game. Yeah, it was obviously the start of a different era in baseball with, you know, the book that came out and then the movie, of course. Actually, I wanted to ask, JD, let's get you in here. Did you watch Moneyball, the movie?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did.
How much did you like it? Throwing you on the spot here.
I saw it once. What do we got? We got a Jonah Hill. We got a Brad Pitt in there.
Yeah, we got Chris Pratt. I was shocked. Looking back, he was Scott Hatterberg.
Philip Seymour Hoffman, too.
Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Wow.
Played Art Howe, yeah.
I have to revisit it. I remember liking it. I remember being shocked at how a movie that's essentially about economics or... You know, it was actually thrilling. It was a bit of a thriller, you know?
Damn right.
Yeah, it was good.
Damn right it was a thriller. It was riveting. A movie about, yes, numbers.
Yeah.
And actually looking back, before it became a thriller, there was a potential that Steven Soderbergh was going to make it more of a documentary style movie where they were going to interview actual players. But then that got scrapped. Pitt became a producer and things changed. And it won, or sorry, it was nominated for 6 Academy Awards.
Yeah.
And Joel, you must have loved just the Oakland Coliseum in that movie, just featured all over the place.
I love that stadium. You know, I think when we were talking about it a couple of weeks ago, it's kind of like baseball's last dive bar. And it's just got such a passionate, you know, fan base there, and it's just so loud, and you know, they really want to be there. It was just awesome to see that whole streak. Yeah,
and they lost in the first round to the Twins 3-2, but an incredible run. Second up here in the greatest accomplishments moments in A's history, as we take you through it, Dallas Braden's perfect game in 2010. Joel,
yeah. Tass, this was an emotional one for sure. Dallas Braden had lost his mom to skin cancer when he was in high school, and he ended up living with his maternal grandmother. You know, so he goes out there and throws a perfect game on Mother's Day in 2010. Just an unbelievable moment. You know, and he embraced his grandmother on the field after the game. It was just so cool. And there was a special promotion that day for him. And he had a bunch of fans in Section 209 because he's from Stockton, California. He's a California kid, you know, grew up there, you know, was drafted by the A's, you know, spent his life and career there, basically. And, you know, so for him to do that in front of his family and friends on Mother's Day of all days, just a very, very special moment. It was just awesome. Yeah.
Nothing wrong with being misty-eyed about this one. Embracing his grandmother, as you said, on the field afterwards. He just threw a perfect game. That's enough of an accomplishment. One of just 23 pitchers at the time to ever do it in 140 years of baseball. And then to be on Mother's Day... It's nice we're giving Mother's Day, Father's Day love here on the show. Let's move on to more of a, you know, a traditional accomplishment for the Oakland A's. A three-peat, 1972 to 1974. I was watching some of these highlights yesterday. Lots of bases being protected after that weird Bruce Bochy call in the Rangers game yesterday. That was the opposite of what was happening in 72 to 74 with the mustache gang, Joel.
Yeah, the mustache gang, the counterculture A's. Yeah, Tass, I'm just going to go through kind of individually year by year really quickly. So, you know, Tass, the Oakland A's are the only other team besides the Yankees to three-peat. It's obviously extremely difficult. Just to win one championship is hard enough, let alone three. And in 1972, they came up against the Big Red Machine, who were, you know, one of the dominant teams during the 70s. And you know, they had a 7-game series. It was a phenomenal series. Some highlights. Well, first of all, Tass, I should mention the 72 World Series championship that the A's won was the Bay Area's first professional championship. I actually didn't know that. And yeah, it was dubbed the Hares versus Squares, which I thought was pretty cool.
The Reds were just a bunch of squares.
Yeah. Well, you know, they were old school. But yeah, and I thought this was interesting too, Tess. Jackie Robinson threw out the first pitch in game two and then tragically passed away just 9 days later, which was a bit sad. And also there was an interesting play in this World Series where Rolly Fingers, a little bit of a sneak attack, was going to look like they were going to intentionally walk Johnny Bench and actually struck him out. So I thought that was pretty cool. So yeah, that was their first World Series in 1972. And then in 1973, they played the Mets in another 7-game series. And this was really interesting, too, because the owner, what's up with A's and having terrible owners? A's owner Charles Finley tried firing the second baseman, Mike Andrews, for his errors in game two. And the league actually had to step in and reinstate him. The players wore athletic tape with Andrews' numbers in support of him. But yeah, and Tass, this was the first year of the DH in the American League, but pitchers still hit, but seldomly. I didn't really understand that. It was before my time, but in my research, that's what it said. And in the World Series, pitchers actually were expected to hit. And Ken Holtzman hit. He was an A's pitcher, and he hit a key double in game one and had another key hit in game seven that helped the A's win that World Series, which I thought was pretty cool. And Oakland reliever Darryl Knowles became the first pitcher to appear in all 7 games in a World Series. So that's pretty cool. And after this series test, the Oakland A's manager resigned. He just was, even after back-to-back World Series championships, he had had enough of that meddlesome owner. But yeah, back-to-back World Series. And then finally, they closed out the three-peat in 1974. And this was the first all-California World Series. This was with the Dodgers and the A's. And yeah, Rolly Fingers figured into 3 of the 4 Oakland wins. He had a win and 2 saves. And Tass, how's this for some great baseball names? You ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. Rolly Fingers, of course.
Yeah, that's
Sal Bando. Sal Bando, Vida Blue, Catfish Hunter, and Johnny Lee Blue Moon Odom. Can't top it.
Can't top it. We even got a Billy North in there. Just really great names. We got a Dick Green in there. Really solid names. Yeah. Great stuff. Great stuff from that three-peat. I thought for a long time it was Rolly Fingers, but then realized it's Rolly. Keep Rolly out on the hill, and good things will happen. That play that I mentioned that guys were blocking the bags when there was a play at the bag, I had no idea that this happened in baseball history in the 74 World Series. Game 5, the A's are up 3-1 in the series, but potentially losing this game. They're up 3-2 in the game, Rolly Fingers on the hill, and Bill Buckner stepped up to the plate.
Yeah.
Yeah, that Bill Buckner stepped up to the plate, hit it into center off Rolly Fingers, and Billy North misplayed it. But Reggie Jackson backed him up. It was a pretty cool play. He chased it down, hit it the cutoff man, Dick Green, who fired it to Sal Bando, who protected third base really, really well. He blocked the bag and blocked Buckner's slide, and LA lost that game. So Rolly finished out that game in the 8th and the 9th. But things could have turned a lot differently if Reggie Jackson, who, as you said, about the Yankees three-peat, many people think of him as a Yankee, but he really had his breakout with the Oakland A's in the early 70s before he became Mr. October. He was Mr. October for the A's in 73.
Yeah.
He was the World Series MVP in 1973.
Yeah, he won 3 series. Won 3 world championships with the A's, absolutely. And Tass, I just thought this was really interesting too. The 1974 World Series was the last championship that was won by a Bay Area team at home up until the 2017 Golden State Warriors, because the Raiders and the Niners and the Giants had all won either on the road or on neutral site. So I thought that was pretty interesting anecdote.
Okay. As we celebrate the Oakland A's history, let's get to one more. The Cinderella A's in 2012. That was, I missed one, JD. That's my fault. I guess we talked about the three-peat for so long, I thought we were on number five. But Dennis Eckersley.
Can't forget about Eckersley.
Nah, winning MVP and Cy Young in the same season, Joel, 1992.
Yeah, Tass, this is amazing because I don't think it's ever going to, it's never been done before. I don't think it's ever going to be done again. A relief pitcher winning MVP and Cy Young. Just a relief pitcher winning Cy Young is difficult enough, but to win both. If you're an advanced analytics fan, you probably don't like this, but, you know, whatever. I mean, I still think it's an amazing accomplishment. And, Tass, when I think of the Oakland A's, like, they, you know, we talked about their three-peats a minute ago, but, Tass, they had great teams in the late 80s and early 90s, too. And when I think of those teams, of course, you know, I think about McGuire, Canseco, Dave Stewart, but I also absolutely think of Dennis Eckersley. He's one of the first players that come to mind when I think about those teams. He had a tremendous career, not only as an A, but his entire career. He's in the Hall of Fame. But yeah, him winning MVP and Cy Young that year, like, what an accomplishment. I mean, what else can you say? I don't think it's ever going to be done again.
51 saves and a 1.91 ERA. He was a starter for 11 years before getting to Oakland in 1987, where he turned his life around. He got sober and then did this in 1992. Now, as a Jays fan, Eckersley had a heck of an accomplishment that season, but the best moment for me was in the ALCS when the Oakland A's went up against the Toronto Blue Jays and gave up the game-tying home run to Roberto Alomar in the ninth. The A's were up 2-1 in that series. They were up 6-1 in the eighth inning of Game 4, and the Jays scored a couple in that inning, the eighth inning, and Eckersley had to come on and finish the job in the eighth. And when he got the last out of the eighth, I know you remember him looking at the Jays dugout with a huge fist pump. Was so excited. Yeah. Then he came out for the ninth inning. And Roberto Alomar, who wasn't obviously a huge home run hitter, but hit a two-run smack to tie the game. And then the Jays went on to win in extra innings, tie the series. Then they won the series, obviously, and the World Series. So great year by Eckersley, but I think Roberto Alomar's moment was a little bit better.
Yeah, and Tass, it's crazy too. Like Eckersley, like I was looking at his FanGraphs page, he pitched until 1998. I was like, what? He pitched until the late 90s? And Tass, I just got to check my notes here. He had 96 saves from the age of 40 to 43. That's unreal. Now, he had left Oakland. He went to St. Louis. And then I think he pitched his final year in Boston. But, I mean, the dude was just a machine. Like, he was so productive over his career, like you said, as a starter, and then kind of rebuilt himself as a reliever when he went to Oakland. What a career. But yeah, when I think of the Oakland A's from the 80s and early 90s, Eckersley's definitely one of the dudes that I think about. And that sweet stash.
It was sweet. Yeah, fortunately he wasn't part of the mustache gang way back when. But he could have been. All right, moving on. The last moment that I mentioned a little bit earlier, because I was getting a little ahead of myself, because I think it is a sensational moment. A sensational season. The Cinderella A's in 2012. No one expected this team to be good, Joel.
No, they were 37 and 49 basically at the halfway point, and then they just absolutely turned it on and they won 17 of 19 games. They caught fire in the second half. Texas was running away with the division. They were actually up by 14 games at one point, and the A's just kept chipping away. Texas, you know, kind of didn't have a great second half. And on that final series of 2012, the A's swept the Rangers. Great game. I recommend anyone, if you got a couple minutes, go back and watch the highlights of that game. The A's were down 5-1 in game 162 and rallied for a big win. And there's that iconic play of Josh Hamilton basically just lazily coming in on a fly ball and dropping it. That was actually the winning runs. And the knives came out for Josh Hamilton after that. That was his final game in a Rangers uniform. But we're talking about the A's here. It was a great success story. You know, they went on. They won the American League West with 103 wins, I believe. It was just awesome. And, you know, in terms of some great names, we had Coco Crisp, you know, Yoenis Cespedes, and Australian rubber-armed reliever and foul-mouthed Grant Balfour. Just a total motley crew. Like, I feel that, you know, just perfectly kind of highlights, I feel like, a lot of those A's teams the last 20 years. Just a mix of a bunch of characters, you know, who just always overperform, but get it done ultimately. And yeah, it was just absolutely awesome to see. Unfortunately, you know, they lost to the eventual American League series or American League champions, Detroit Tigers, but they got an amazing ovation from the crowd after the series, which again, like, you know, I feel this is a common theme, but, you know, Taz, those Ace fans, man, they turn out. You know, they love that team. They're passionate about that team. They really care about them. And, you know, it was nice to see that. So, yeah, those 2012 A's, you know, unbelievable. What a run.
I do remember that ovation. It was a four-minute ovation. The fans finally saying their last goodbye that season after they were eliminated by the Detroit Tigers. They just wouldn't let their players go. Just stood there and applauded them over and over. They didn't leave the stadium. Nah. They had nowhere to go. They just wanted to cheer on this team that really no one expected to be good. Yeah, the numbers there, 37-42, about the midway point, and then they're 57-26 the rest of the way. It's Cinderella stuff. Coco Crisp, Grant Balfour, as you said, Bartolo Colon. No one expected this team to be good. A sensational story. Great year. You know, we could have done a lot of other moments, covered a lot of other moments. Canseco starting the 40-40 club. You mentioned Maguire, the 89 World Series that was interrupted by the tragic earthquake there with between the A's and the Giants. I forgot. I think it was like 13 days that they took off in between games 2 and 3. It was a long period of time that they took off because of the earthquake. And the A's, you know, despite game 3 being canceled as they were about to start the game, they came back and won game 3 and game 4. So many moments that we didn't mention. If you're amongst the bleacher creatures, or hit us up on Instagram, let us know your favorite moments, because there's so many. This was a very, very subjective list, but wanted to go through Oakland A's history a little bit, show a little love, and we all made it through without crying. So I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but
speak
anyway.
Speak for yourself. Very emotional over here.
Well, you're going to get emotional in this next segment, JD.
Oh, yeah.
It's another edition of You're Out, where we will talk about and have to eliminate one ballpark nut. Yep. We'll be right back.
When you get injured, you don't want to wait for answers and options. That's why it may be time to explore the Nano Experience, a revolutionary treatment option designed to help active people get back to the lifestyles they love. Nanotechnology allows surgeons to see inside even the smallest joints and treat orthopedic conditions with a tiny camera and other nano instrumentation, all through a barely there poke hole incision. Wherever you've experienced an injury, whether it be a foot and ankle, hand and wrist, shoulder and elbow, knee or hip, nanoarthroscopy can be used to diagnose and treat your condition in an extremely minimally invasive way. Don't wait to learn about the revolutionary Nano Experience and how it could help you or someone you know after an injury. Visit arthrex.info/theathletic. This is not medical advice and is not meant to be a substitute for advice from your physician. Talk with your physician about your health condition, potential surgical risks, and whether Arthrex products are right for you. Postoperative management is patient-specific and dependent upon your physician's assessment. Individual results will vary.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
It's time for another edition of Year Out, where we've got to eliminate one item from a menu of three. And today's conundrum, ballpark nuts. We've got three nuts to discuss. Well, sort of nuts. Yeah. Well, we were having this conversation off air, and we were getting into the salty snack that we preferred at ballparks. Peanuts. Joel threw in a pistachios as the greatest nut of all time.
Right.
And then we were discussing, okay, in this exercise where we have to eliminate one item, what are we going to throw in there? Almonds? Cashews?
Not at the ballpark.
Number one, not at the ballpark. Number two, they'd probably be eliminated anyways. Well, maybe not. at the ballpark, those two would lose immediately, I would say. So we threw in sunflower seeds instead. We had this discussion. Yeah, it fits. So you've got to eliminate one ballpark snack. You're in your seat. Peanuts, pistachios, or sunflower seeds that you got to get rid of. Joel, what's your take? We know you love your pistachios because you're a fancy person. But what are you taking? What are you eliminating?
I'm a fancy person. That's very nice of you to say, Tess.
Apparently.
Yeah,
I didn't know you had such a fancy for pistachios.
Oh, I mean, but just pistachios are just really good. Like, I'm getting rid of sunflower seeds. They're very high maintenance to eat. They're super salty. They get caught in your teeth, but I suppose like that's a lot of nuts. I've never been a sunflower seeds guy, even though I'm a huge baseball fan. Just not a sunflower seeds bro. So sorry, sunflower seeds, you're out.
Wow.
Thank you for that.
No hesitation, too, by the way. No hesitation.
You didn't think
when you guys told me the three picks, I'm like, oh, okay, that's easy. Sunflower seeds, next.
You picked up the bowl.
Give you guys more time to talk.
We didn't pick the most appetizing picture, either. It looks like birdseed. It looks like Blue Jays food. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's my bad.
Well, no, it's how do you make a sunflower seed look appetizing? I mean, it's tough.
Pistachios definitely look the most appetizing.
Yeah.
I would say peanuts, not the most appetizing look, but
right.
Where are you going? Forget about the pictures. This is an audio medium for many, Joel, JD. What do we got? What are we doing?
I'm actually more torn than I thought it would be.
Me
on
too.
This because I love a sunflower seed, but I really, really suck at shelling them. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm so jealous when I see people like, you know, just pop it in your mouth and just do the trick where you shell it in your mouth and then you poof, and then the seed perfectly shelled in two parts just flies out of the mouth.
Right.
And then you have like a growing, you know, pile of shells at your feet. And it's also like, it's more of a nibbly snack, you know, like it lasts so much longer because it's so high maintenance, you know what I mean? And they're delicious, but when I was putting together this Photoshop, I was like, it's obviously sunflower seeds, but I'm not sure. Like, I love all three of them. This is tough. This is very tough. I am going to go with sunflower seeds. You're out of here. Simply because I can't enjoy them like you're supposed to, because I simply cannot shell them. You know what I mean?
Great point. A very, very good point. Yeah. Yes, we're doing the handiwork with the peanuts and the pistachios, but that is my one skill, is that I can throw in a huge handful and just go one by one in my mouth and spit them out. So
that's incredible to me. You should do an instructional YouTube video on how to do it, because it's like that and like the wolf whistle thing. I can't do that.
Yeah, I'm not good at that.
I can't do it either.
It's like, I gotta figure that out.
This was tough, though. It's difficult to eliminate peanuts just because they are such a staple.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of the peanut skin. It's just not. It's like you take off the shell, and now you got to get rid of the skin as well.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
It's like a double shelling. Yeah. So that was that's my one problem. But I'm not eliminating peanuts. It's the one a ballpark is the one place where you can get really messy and just dump shells everywhere. So pistachios kind of fit that bill as well. I guess you're getting them in a bag, like, because they don't sell pistachios at ballparks.
No.
Am I right, Joel? Anywhere? Does that exist?
I haven't seen it, but a team should get on that ASAP if they're not.
Right. Yeah, you're right. I prefer those two to sunflower seeds because of the mess. Now, why am I thinking of the mess? I'm not cleaning up, but I do think it's a little disgusting thinking about somebody spitting out sunflower seeds onto a stadium cement. I mean, that's pretty freaking gross. It's gross as it is, just the peanut shells. But now you're adding spit with sunflower seeds, which you don't get with the other two. So I'm not going to eliminate sunflower seeds. They're just too ingrained in my head with baseball. It's just a perfect match. But I am going to throw on this caveat. You need a cup to spit them in.
Yeah.
You can't just spit them anywhere.
What a civilized gentleman you are.
I've changed.
You are.
I mean, I used to spit them everywhere. I'll see. Maybe it's being a dad and just hating the idea of messes. Yeah. But I can't even spit them on like turf. Like I was able to play in a beer league stadium last year, which was a nice stadium. It's not a stadium, a field, which had turf in the outfield, and I couldn't. Couldn't bear to spit.
It's like somebody's carpet.
Yeah. So it's weird. But I'm getting rid of pistachios, even though they are the most excellent nut. At a ballpark? Sorry.
They don't belong here. I think you almost convinced me.
Yeah.
But if they sold pistachios, I mean, but they don't. But I don't know. I feel like the sunflower seeds just belong in the dugout. That's it. That's the only place that it's acceptable to spit them willy-nilly. You know what I mean?
Yes. A good point here from Dysolus in the Bleacher Creatures. Sunflower seeds come in every flavor, which they have a wider range of flavors, even though pistachios do have some flavors.
Mm-hmm.
But you can get the Dysolus point here. I like that point. I like that. You know, barbecue, whatever. Yeah. You see your Davids behind baseball players in the dugout. They've got the range of flavors in there. I think original is always the way to go, but nothing wrong with a little flavor every once in a while. No. So see you later, pistachios.
Okay.
Give me the seeds. Give me the crunchy seeds. It's you're right about, Joel, good point about getting caught in your teeth, because pistachios aren't getting caught in your teeth. Sunflower seeds are. I don't like the skin of a peanut, but yeah, it's more of a hassle with the sunflower seeds. And he said they're too salty. You can get unsalted.
That's true. That is true.
That's a fair point.
I don't know why you.
But
would,
it's just so it's just so gratifying. Just cracking, like, pistachios are just so easy to crack open, and you just. That little pinch, and they just come right apart. Oh, man. And you just toss them in the cup, and they make that sound test. I'm with you. When I eat pistachios at home, I got to
throw them on the floor.
Don't throw them on the floor. No. And just that little clink they hit with that little clink sound they make when they hit the glass. That's like ASMR stuff right there. I could go to sleep in 5 minutes after that. So I'm I'm going to buck tradition. I'm sticking with pistachios. I respect both of your answers. You guys make valid points, but I'm pretty passionate about pistachios.
Yeah, clearly.
That's a great point about the ASMR. Forget me teaching people how to eat sunflower seeds. We should start a channel of just throwing pistachio shells into a cup, or at least a video.
Let's do it.
It sounds great, but you say they're easy to crack open. You can get a tough nut.
Yeah.
And they could be impossible to open. Like, I even with teeth.
Yeah.
You can even try and bite it open.
But you can, yeah, I'm not disagreeing with you, but you can get a tough peanut, you know, and then try, like, with JD. I cannot shell. I've had some tough peanuts. True story. I've had some tough peanuts. I had one in 98. But I'm like JD. I cannot shell sunflower seeds at all. Yeah. And when I was a kid, like, I didn't even really know how to eat them. And I would just kind of chew them and swallow everything. I know that's disgusting, but I didn't really know how to do it. And I just swallowed everything. So yeah, maybe a little bit of a PTSD from that. So that's maybe why sunflower seeds are out for me.
Yeah, it's a good point. I may be having a little PTSD thinking about, you know, the one raunchy one you get in a sunflower bag too. Ooh. That's like,
oh yeah.
I don't know how that works, but it's gone rotten or something.
Mm-hmm.
It's natural to just try and chew on them and just have some shell. I'm trying to teach my 5-year-old to bite and separate and spit, but it's a tough skill.
It's tough. It's very tough.
Yeah. You're either born with it or you're not, I think. Anyway, that was fun. Let us know. What are you eliminating? The fancy pistachio, the peanut, or the classic sunflower seed. It's tough. We're going to be seeing pistachios at ballparks soon. They've got to be some. They've got to be in some sort of sweet, probably.
100%.
Not for the common folk.
Hot pistachios.
Hot pistachios.
Yeah.
Do those exist?
I don't know. They should.
Are you connecting them with boiled peanuts that they have down here in the South?
Yeah. Have you had those?
I think so.
Yeah. Not a fan. Rachel loves them, but...
Really?
Yeah, she loves them.
Hot nuts.
Hot nuts from a gas station in northern Georgia.
Oh. I went to Bucky's and got these hot nuts. No, you're right. Just like on the side of the road.
Yeah.
Quite often.
Yep.
Yummy.
Crazy.
I hear you. I mean, sometimes hot nuts are good, but I'm having some flashbacks. Yeah, we got to start a nut channel. Anyway, what am I talking about? Speaking of great channels, check us out on the Athletic Baseball Show on YouTube. We stream live every Wednesdays. Check out Joel's excellent work on our Instagram page, @no_bunts. Actually, I think Dennis Kasumba recently commented on his video that we put together on YouTube. I do think it's the real Dennis Kasumba, Joel, so pat on the back to everybody here. And pat on the back to Dennis Kasumba. Great story. TheAthletic.com/baseball show or TheAthletic.com/NoDunks to get the best sports writing in the world. Great deal going on here until June 30th. An incredible deal. So jump on that. Only $1 a month. For JD, for Joel, it was really fun. We'll see you Wednesday, June 28th.